with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is November 23rd. The year is flying by. We're almost finished with 2016. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. Today's Wednesday, and as usual, we have attempt to have a guest on with us. And today we have returning with us Matt Holkstrunk, who is a citizen scientist who really is somewhat becoming an expert on reading radioactive levels in our country. So thanks, Matt, for joining us again. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Lonnie. It's good to be here.
It's fortuitous that we had scheduled you today because of the earthquake that happened on Monday. I know many of our listeners are wondering, like, what's the radiation levels going to be like? Why don't we start with that first? What have you seen coming out of there?
Well, as you know, a lot of the information coming out of Japan right now is pretty sketchy. It's hard to really figure out what they're talking about. They seem to talk in some sort of a code, but they did have a problem with at least one of the spent fuel pools. Sounds like it was number 3, which I'm not even entirely sure that pool even exists. after Fukushima, number 3 was that one that really took that huge blast. So they're saying now that pool lost cooling. And, the temperatures were rising. The temperatures that they gave out to me didn't seem very concerning. They seemed low enough. But it depends. I guess that depends if there's actual fuel rods still in the pool or not.
Well, maybe do they need to cool down the fuel rod debris? I mean, maybe what they're doing is a euphemism for fuel rods. Maybe it's just leftover debris that's highly radioactive that was left there. Would that force them to have to cool it down?
Boy, I don't know about that.
Really?
I haven't really thought about that kind of a scenario. I don't know the radiation levels would be so high, I don't think they could gather all that stuff together very easily. It would have to
be all
done with automated stuff. Yeah, you're talking really high radiation when you start breaking open spent fuel rods.
This whole thing about we're trying to cool down number 3, the pumps in number 3, what was that all about then? Why did they even go there to make people feel what? I mean, if there's nothing there, there's no core left, right?
No.
One blew up, there can't be possibly anything left in that building, right?
Yeah, see, the problem, number 3 had... Let's see now if I remember this correctly. Number 3 was the one that had the plutonium fuel in it, the MOX fuel, if I'm not mistaken. And Or am I thinking number four?
I think number four had the MOX fuel.
Number four had the MOX fuel in it. So number three, but number three did have a very large explosion, right? Or number, well, let's see now. Number, it's been a long time since I've been
researching
this.
Honestly, Matt, it's been 5 years. Let me just ask the group,
yeah.
Did number three?
Excuse me? Lonnie, are you there?
I beg your pardon. Yeah, are you there?
Oh, here we go. Okay.
There we go. So, what are we seeing out of there? If we can't determine if it's still functioning, what kind of radiation levels are we seeing coming out of Fukushima?
Well, you got ongoing stuff happening. I mean, if we have cores that are missing and that are down in the ground. You know, you're having fission products basically coming up through the ground or bubbling up, however they can do it, into the atmosphere. So there's constantly stuff being released from that area, constantly, 24/7. And you know, with the shaking going on, that just helps it reactivate when you start doing that. Because it sort of settles in. Sometimes it settles into a nice area where it doesn't want to react too well. It spreads out maybe a little bit and shake it up a little bit, and it can move back closer together. Now, if they've had a pump break on one of the pools, and the temperature rises enough, you know, you start having everything heat up.
Well, I just saw that number three did blow up. It was number three.
It was number three.
Yeah, so how could they possibly be saying that they need cooling pumps at number three? Like that?
I don't know. Number three was the big one. Number three was that big one that really blew high with a big gray mushroom cloud, and it had huge equipment pieces flying up in the air that landed on the adjacent building and put huge holes in the building.
Wow.
So, you know, they flew over that with a plane, and you know, they can't even get near that place. It's so bad. You know, they've been working on number four, but number three, I don't know what they've done with that.
What was that news? I mean, I specifically was watching the news feed, and I watched the guy say, well, we've got the pumps going back in number three, and we're working on the decommissioning of the number three, don't worry about it. They're just lying.
Well,
they're just saying whatever.
Yeah, because those pools. See, the biggest issue with me with those pools is those pools have to be kept extremely clean. So that water in there has to be in the shape of a deionized water, ultra pure water. It cannot handle any sort of a chloride load. And when I'm talking chloride, I'm talking salt. Sea salt, and they were pumping seawater into everything that they could. They were firing seawater into that. So what that does, that immediately starts corroding everything. Under high temperature and high radiation, it just accelerates incredibly fast. And the salt will then, if it's boiling off, if the water's boiling off, the salt will actually deposit all around the rods, around the assemblies. And when that happens, you can't remove the stuff. It is locked in place. You try pulling it up, it's just going to break. It's going to break in a million pieces. Mm-hmm. And so early on, I was thinking, this is really, really bad. I mean, when putting seawater in any kind of a nuclear thing is the worst thing you can possibly do. And they have all sorts of equipment to take all the radioactivity and all the chlorides out of that water in these pools to keep them really super pure. And so when you do that, you've basically said, well, this thing is destroyed, and at some point it's going to burn. At some point we're going to lose control of this. We're not going to be able to keep control of it, because the chlorides are just going to eat the fuel rods away, and everything's just going to end up in a big, big, big mess. And so I don't know what they're really talking about. You know, they may be trying to cover up something else that's going on. This was my gut thought when I heard it was number three that they were talking about.
Yeah.
If they're talking about maybe maybe number 5 or number 6, the pool's over there, maybe. But I even have, you know, I've even got some question whether there's any pools at all left over there.
I don't think there. How could there possibly be anything left after that building exploded?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's like a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, they had a bunch of, you know, they had the whole crane fell into the pool too, you know, and that's gonna really mess stuff up when you start doing it. These fuel assemblies and the racks down there are not that robust. It doesn't take much to tweak them out of shape into a shape where you can't touch them. You can't go down and pull them. You can't remove these things. So I don't know. So they're talking about some release, you know, somewhere. Something probably happened with the earthquake and one of the reactors somewhere there. Maybe it's another meltdown. Maybe it's more fuel pool issues, which are the bad part. But
I think if there is something, I heard, this is my issue, is like I heard when I was watching the live feed, the guy said, well, we don't have anything to worry about because it will take about a week. That will give us time to start cooling the facility down again. He said, we'll have a week before it hits criticality. Isn't that what happened before, Matt, where during the whole event, when the first Fukushima event happened, they basically lied to everybody for weeks on end until they couldn't lie anymore?
Yeah, they didn't tell us the information that we needed to have in order to make a good decision ourselves. So, you know, they finally a long time after it happened, they came out with the heat loading from the spent fuel in those pools. And you could see right off that number 4, because they had just offloaded that one. Or was it 4? 4 was the one that they had offloaded. That was the one that they didn't have fuel in the reactor, they supposedly. And that pool was loaded to its max, to a huge high heat generation capability. So if any of them were to burn, number 4 was the first one to burn. And that exploded, you know, towards the end, right about when you would expect it to be going off. You know, that was right about the right time. And so there, you know, was it a hydrogen explosion? Well, you know, before it burns, those fuel rods produce an awful lot of hydrogen. And if you can't release that hydrogen and then you have some little tiny spark, it doesn't take much. You know, even a static spark will set that stuff off. And then, you know, there was some, you know, and then from then on, it just gets worse and worse. And the pools will eventually drop in level and start smoking and burning. And, you know, they don't want the smoke and all that stuff drifting inland. So my thought was they're going to wait and they're going to burn it on purpose so they have offshore flow. But they're not going to want to, you know, do it in the winter time when they have a lot of east winds going on there blowing onshore. They want to have offshore winds when they do it. So I figured they would do it in the next summer or the fall, or that summer and that fall. And that's exactly when we saw multiple more plumes hit, about
really?
9 or 10 of them, about nine or 10 of them hit, in the fall, late fall, early winter.
Are we seeing plumes of radiation already affecting us from the earthquake 2 days ago, or is it going to come? How is it going to affect the Northwest?
Yeah, it won't really come in a plume. What it'll do, that's right now, I was looking at the wind maps yesterday over there, and there's a big low pressure system to the north that's dragging everything up. It's located right near Korea. I don't know if it's a hurricane or what, but it's a pretty good size. And that thing will suck everything up into it, and that'll take it up. And it will directly deposit it then in the jet stream.
Great.
And that jet stream, that's the polar jet stream, will bring it our way very quickly. And the jet was making a big bend just before it hit us yesterday. I don't know what it's doing today, but there's a good chance that the West Coast will get hit by something. And what that would be the gases at first. It'll be the iodines, and that's the biggest one, the radioactive iodine, I guess, that we have to worry about.
Like
it's got a short half-life. Yeah, some cesium. But the iodine is the one that'll get your thyroid if you're not, you know, if you're not dosed up with iodine, natural iodine, prior to it hitting.
So should people be taking an iodine substance during the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think it would be good not necessarily to overdose on iodine, but it might be good to take
a little bit.
Take something. Anything would be better than nothing. But you don't want to take a lot of iodine either. And you really don't want to be taking the potassium iodine pills for any length of time. So I suppose if I had some, I might take them for the next couple of days.
Huh.
You know? So that stuff is due to hit at any point. We got rain right now in the forecast here. So we may be seeing the rain get a little hotter with it. That's probably what will make the monitors go off, or everybody's monitors go off, if they just keep checking the rain coming down. So that's the first thing that comes in. And then the second thing that comes in is if there's a big explosion or another, if, you know, whatever's happening, I'm not sure what it is, but if it's another core meltout or something, you get a lot of other stuff that's released that tends to stay a lot lower. It doesn't go up high, and that low stuff will be in a big plume that takes time to come across the Pacific Ocean, and it will come all the way across, and it'll hit. And that stuff's probably the worst, because it can hang out for quite a while. The one that hit here hung out for at least a full month. They had the monitors turned off.
Hmm. Well, this is just so incredible that we hear absolutely nothing. Like I've been scouring. It's very difficult to find information. Like there's just a complete zero. Let's don't discuss it. I mean, I'm somewhat flabbergasted that, especially here in the Northwest, like I have been attempting to call Elliot Mainzer, right? I've been giving out his number, and I will give that in a minute, but, you know, I can't get through to him. I can't even get through to his secretary. And so yesterday, I said to the person, you know what? I'm going to keep calling, and I'm going to keep announcing this phone number on my radio show. And we're going to, you know, like if what happened in Fukushima this week to me presents a real, and it was a wake up call about how much danger we are in the Northwest with the Columbia Generating Station.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's an incredibly dangerous thing up there, because they have really, because of the Columbia Gorge there, they have some strong air flows both east and west. In the summertime it's blowing it to the east, and in the wintertime it sucks it up in back west here. And so if anything were to happen at the Columbia Generation Station right now, Portland would be in incredible danger.
Really?
Yeah.
So in the wintertime, the Columbia Generating Station is threatening to the Northwest, and in the summer, it's threatening to the East Coast.
Yeah. It's threatening, to everything to the east. So any of the cities over there, Boise, Spokane, you know, those are all in danger.
Wow. Okay, well, I have to say, man, I'm kind of dumbstruck, like, that we're going through, I think, at Fukushima, I think that we're going through something that they're just refusing to tell us about again. And the silence is deafening. If nothing was going on, they'd be talking about it. But, you know, we were told the day of the earthquake the other day, Sendai had some type of a problem. That's what they said in the live feed, that Daini, that they were, you know, fixing things. Things had gone down, and now we hear absolutely nothing, zero.
Yeah, well, the Japanese do have that secret law out now, where nobody can talk about anything. So that makes it extremely difficult.
Yeah, for them, yes, it does. Well, even
that's pretty much the game plan of the nuclear industry, that they will downplay anything bad, and if it's bad enough, they don't want anybody to know. They'll just hush it up and hope nobody ever finds out. I mean, that's how they've worked since the beginning.
That's right. That's right.
Some of the stuff, some of the stuff they do is just insane. It's you know, I stumbled across on the internet just this last week about this little military project called Project Pluto. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Oh.
It was so insane I couldn't even believe it. And so I researched it and I looked it up, and yeah, it's on the internet. You can find it. Project Pluto, sometimes it's called SLAM, SLAM, for supersonic low altitude missile. Is what they called it, a supersonic low altitude missile.
A
Well, it
big
was a
stick. I
lot more
just
than
saw something called it's a big stick. I just typed it in. That's
big stick
insane.
or the flying crowbar. A crowbar, flying crowbar. Crowbars are used in demolition just to destroy stuff, you know, and rip stuff apart. And they nicknamed it the flying crowbar when they were talking about it. Yeah, so this thing was insane. It had a nuclear reactor for a motor, unshielded, no containment. So this thing would,
Wow.
it was a ramjet motor capable of Mach 3 or Mach 4, loaded with 20 plus nuclear warheads. It was a drone. It was capable of going 100,000 miles without stopping. So it didn't have a pilot. They set it on auto control. They launched the thing up. The thing just spewed radiation. It would come in, and it was designed to fly really low, right over the treetops. And so it would fly really
Oh my
low,
God.
really, really fast at that Mach 3, Mach 4, just irradiating and spewing radiation down below it. The reactor itself would produce neutron rays that would just bombard anything it flew over. And it would go around and deliver the 20 plus nuclear bombs, and then after that it would just continue to fly around low, just terrorizing the countryside. They thought that the shot sonic booms would destroy, well, it was loud enough to pop your eardrums, and also it would break glass in houses and probably destroy a lot of stuff just from the shaking of the thing. And it would just fly around for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks over enemy territory, just
Radiating the
causing
daylights.
just being a terror product, you know, just pure
Wow.
terror. Yeah, and eventually when it ran out of fuel, they would crash it into someplace really important, and you know, and just that would irradiate. The debris would be highly radioactive for a long time. It was really one of the most insane weapons I've ever come across from our military and the nuclear cartel. It was unbelievable.
I have to say, Matt, that makes me think two things. Like, I just, while you were talking, I looked it up on the internet. It said it ended 7 years after it started. So I have two thoughts. When I was listening to you talk about all the stuff that it did, imagine the cost of the experiment of what they
Oh, yeah.
decided, how much we put out for this failed, just like everything in the nuclear, it's a failed experiment. Well, this is a failed idea. And then the second thing that came to my mind is I wonder what else they've developed. I mean this was dead in 1964. 1964, right?
Yep,
So
64, yep.
what else have they done since then? I mean, that's kind of the scary thing of like, what is it that they're able to do now? I mean, the technology is so much more far advanced. I
Oh,
mean, you
yeah.
know, it the 90% rule is very real. Dr. John Goffman, I mean, when I was reading Poison Power, he talked about that. And in fact, both his books, he mentions his studies. When he did conducted the studies, he did his own personal studies of the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because our government destroyed all the documents for the women and children when they went over there and took the
Right.
studies, right? So he went
Right.
back and for 20 years studied them, and hit the conclusion of his studies, besides the epidemiological issues that happened from the radioactive contamination, was that he found that the United States government, it generates from the IAEA and every atomic energy agency in every government, and every government really essentially basically underreport the negative effects of radiation by 90%, and initially deny radiation causes harm. Their position is you have to prove it's causing harm before they'll admit that it's causing harm.
Right.
Which is why the people in St. Louis, with what they're doing, proving that they're being harmed by the radioactive contamination with their flowcharts, I think that really did shake up the nuclear industry quite a bit, that to realize that, hey, there's smart people out there who can connect these dots and do the work that we're refusing to do, so that the government is forced to actually look at their information.
Right. Yeah, very similar thing happened at Three Mile Island, too. They had to go around and take, you know, the citizens had to go around and get radiation surveys from the area, and they could, and then they showed that, graphed it, and proved it on maps, you know, that these areas got hit hard, and look at the cancer incidents in these areas.
Not it's just totally cancer. Correlated. Look at the, I mean, my sister lives near Three Mile Island. She has three grandchildren that have autism. That is not an accident. I mean, when I said that to her, she's like, "Oh, you think that it couldn't have been caused?" I'm like, "Who in our family has autism? Nobody. No, we don't have a history of autism in our family at all."
Exactly.
And these are the subtle kinds of things where the medical industry has failed and totally dropped the ball. Because if we got physicians on board to talk about the real harm that radioactive contamination does, we could stop the nuclear industry in its tracks.
Yeah.
So, and I think the reason, going back to Fukushima here, Matt, what are the kind of rates? I asked you this about it. We kind of got sidetracked a half an hour ago. What are the kind of rates that we're seeing coming out of Fukushima? Is there any kind of increased levels or anything like that?
I have yet to see anything.
How long do you think it'll take to get here?
Well, the gases transported by the jet stream, they come in pretty quick, so I would say 3 to 4 days it should be here at the most. It could show up in 2 days.
Thanksgiving weekend, right? So thanks, by this weekend, we should not be going out into the woods hiking here in the Northwest. We should actually be staying indoors then.
Yeah, I really don't know what the heck is going on over there, so it's hard for me to say one way or the other what, you know, if it could be a threat. If they're not saying anything, you know, since Fukushima, I always go out. If I have a raincoat on, I make sure I have a hood on, you know, just to try to keep the rain off my body.
Yeah.
And that's about all you can do. I mean, if you're going to be outside and everybody has to at some point, you are going to get wet.
Yeah.
So you try to minimize it as the exposure as much as you can is what you do.
Wow.
Yes.
Quite stunning. Quite stunning. Have we seen an increase of radiation here in the Northwest? What have our levels been in our country? Like what you've been studying, what have you found?
Well, I've found a lot of interesting stuff that I'm still trying to digest and still trying to come up with a theory behind. You know, it's quite spotty what I'm getting, especially from RadNet, from the EPA. The data I get from them is all, it's really crazy looking. It's filled with big steps, you know, that jump up on you and fall down on you, and you just wonder really what's going on. That you shouldn't see that. You should really just see, you know, a nice little graph with stuff going on rather than these abrupt changes that sometimes are 1,000 counts per minute change. Sometimes they're only a few hundred, but they happen in just about every city that I've studied on the Pacific West Coast without exception. So there's something going on there, whether they're trying to keep the readings in a certain range on their graph that they have, you know, if they're graphing over time. You let these radiation ranges get too high or too low, they'll go off your graph, so you bring them down by 1,000, and then you just realize, well, that 5,000 reading there is really 6,000. And they know that, but you don't know that when you're looking at the graph. So it's really a game of cat and mouse that they're playing with us, I think. I don't know what else it is. I can't come up with another explanation on it.
This is the hard part for me to manage and emotionally is, why would they do this to an entire planet? Like, what is the point of them harming? Are they just so brainwashed themselves? Have they just convinced themselves so badly that it's just not that big of a deal that they're willing to ignore the facts? I mean, a perfect example is Three Mile Island. I mean, there's been no compilation of medical effects, like even around St. Louis. I mean, this is the one thing, if our medical industry had even had a half a forethought about compiling data in terms of, and I think that's one of the issues that I've discovered here, is doctors don't really keep track of how many kids have autism, how many people get cancer, all these rates of effective rates in terms of a population in relation to a nuclear power station. I mean, there's just no attempt to correlate cause and effect.
Yeah, and they should. They should be keeping track of it. But the whole industry is so large. It's staggeringly large. It goes through just about every single sector of the U.S. economy. And for us, and for that whole thing to collapse, you know, it would certainly collapse. It would be a world collapse of economic size, which probably would be it would be good in the long term. It would be good. It would be bad. It'd be a little rough in the short term to go through it, but you know, we can and have the ability to change from one system to another. Like we have the ability to change. Used to have the ability to change from a non-war economy to a war economy. But we never seem to change back on World War II back into the non-war economy. They wanted to keep all of the stuff that they had in place, all of the tooling in place to continue to manufacture all the bombs and everything. So, it really takes our government really to be able to do that. It's hard for individual people to do it. And, of course, the military themselves won't do it. So it takes somebody else in a position of power to get that drawn back into the peace phase.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. They have basically, it's like a tentacle. They have tentacles all over the entire country so that if we really did go non-nuclear, if we really shut down everything, it would cause an economic, it would harm people economic, not just the nuclear industry, but the way the tentacles go, you mean?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it'll touch all the little people that are working in those places, and that they would be, you know, at least for the short term, they might be without a job.
There's not that many people, though, that work there. We're not talking. It's kind of like when I was talking to the people in Illinois about the NDRC. They were talking about they're helping keeping together. They're working with the legislature to keep two crippled nuclear power plants going. I think it's in Indiana or it's in Illinois, I think. And they're like, well, you know, there's going to be job losses. I looked into it. There's like 1,500 jobs. That's not a lot of jobs. We have millions of people. When you look at the harm that you're causing to millions of people as opposed to 1,500 technicians being able to find a job, that's a beyond comprehension to me.
Yeah, if you're talking about closing an individual nuclear plant or facility, yeah, that's what you're talking about. But if you're trying to really do away with the whole nuclear technology and everything with it, you know, and get rid of the bombs, get rid of the DU munitions, get rid of everything, you know, even you know, I hate to say it, even some of the nuclear isotopes or the nuclear medicines that are manufactured from the isotopes, those would probably have to rethink how you would do that. Maybe you'd have a smaller facility that you would just do medicinal work on and nothing else. I don't know what the answer is there, but if you look at overall all the industries that supply instruments to and contractors that build all this stuff and research people that look into it and use it, it touches everybody. I mean, it really touches everybody. It's quite amazing when you what's what you find out about it when you
Well, what
start
do you
looking
mean
at
by
it.
that? I mean, like, where?
Well,
How does
for instance,
explain that?
yeah, I'll give you a for instance that not too many people know about, but here in Corvallis, we used to have the largest manufacturer here used to be Hewlett Packard. And you think, well, what could Hewlett Packard be doing for the nuclear industry? They make what do they make? They make anything that could possibly,
They
and
make
for a long
like
time, I didn't think they made.
they make like
I didn't th
printers and things like that.
printers, yeah, printers and p stuff for people,
Yeah.
and computers and monitors and stuff like that. And then I find out that well, they had a contract with the government to make a gold-plated circuit board for the ICBM missiles. And they're the only ones that could do it, I guess. Gold plated. The whole thing was plated in gold. Or,
So how does that relate to the nuclear industry?
well, that relates to the nuclear weapons industry, right? They're making stuff for nuclear ICBM missiles.
So this is the
I don't
whole
know that completely.
well, so there you go. That's my ignorance. See, I'm like the perfect post-ignorance person because, like, I didn't when you said ICBM missile, I have no idea what that means. This is in fact how they've been able to get away with it. This is why I don't mind being spontaneous and honest about my lack of knowledge on this because we cannot acknowledge how we've been brainwashed and how we have been bamboozled by the bullshit, you know what I mean? Until we
Yeah.
just say, what, hello, I can you explain that, you know? And so the ice, because
Yes. In
you said
layman's terms,
missiles, I had
yes.
no idea how that would relate. And I'm sh certain that I'm like 90% or 99% of all Americans. I have no idea. So what you're saying essentially is a lot of our industries are wrapped around building. Really, not only nuclear power plants, but our nuclear military. Like, our military is heavily dependent. What I hear you say is our military is heavily dependent on nuclear.
Yes, it is. Extremely, yeah.
Even though we've gone away from like the nuclear bombs. I mean, there's this big whole push in Congress that right now where they're going to be refixing the, our downgraded, our outdated nuclear program.
Yeah.
Outside of, I mean, that was one of the things that the GOP did in 2008, right before or seven, before Barack Obama came. They put a poison pill in the future budget. They mandated in 2012, we have to start spending money, billions of dollars on nuclear plants. So that's why that
Yeah.
increased in 2012. But they've dug in their heels. I mean, it's not just the GOP. It's they've all just sort of said, yeah, well, we can. Patty Murray's office said we cannot afford to go without nuclear. Like, this is a huge industry, and we
Yeah.
rely on that, and we believe it's a safe technology. We do not believe it's a hindrance to. They think that those of us who want to shut down the nuclear industry are just being fear-mongered. We're fear-mongers and trying to stop people from a technology that really is safe.
Yeah, well, it really isn't, and the military is extremely dependent on nuclear reactors in every single ship and submarine that they build. Every single one of those has nuclear power, and
Every like all of the, our every one
all of
of
the
them.
bigger sh all of the bigger ships, all of, in fact, that new one that they just set sail, the Zumwalt. Did you hear about that? It was
No.
stuck down in Panama, in the Panama Canal. It broke down. Well,
No.
what happened there is they had a problem with the propulsion system. Ah, what propels that thing? Ah, some pretty good sized nuclear reactors. And the
Really?
thing is dead in the water, and it had yeah, you should go read about it. They never once talk about nuclear propulsion on the ship, but that's what's in it. It's got one of those these giant nuclear reactors in the thing that, or at least one, or maybe you can have two in that ship. I don't know. I haven't seen the plans on it, but it's nuclear powered, and they lost propulsion. In fact, they had problems with the reactor leaking even before the thing set sail. They tried to fix it, and they thought they had it fixed, and then they brought it out. They were going to pick up a weapons system, I guess, over in Bangor. Washington, I think where they were going. But yeah, so they're having an issue with that right now. So they're not fail-proof, by any means.
I'm a little bit dumbfounded. So our military,
Yeah.
on all of our naval vessels, the more
All of
modern
them.
vessels, have, so we basically have a nuclear catastrophe floating around on the ocean everywhere on this planet.
In every sub,
Like, where
on
we're,
every, on, yep.
one of the things, one of the reasons that Russia feels threatened is we've moved all of our warships over there, right? We sort of lined around the whole continent over there.
Yeah.
And you're telling me every one of those ships is a nuclear facility?
That's what I'm saying. And I don't know what the size cutoff is on them, but I know every single submarine we produce has them, and every single aircraft carrier we produce has them, and every single destroyer has them. And I'm not sure how far down in class you get, PT boat or whatever, where they finally go back to a diesel motor. But all of the large ships that we have are nuclear powered, every single one of them.
Why? Why did we do that?
Because they don't need to get into port. They can stay out for long periods of time and they don't need to refuel. And that's basically the only reason. In the submarines, it allows them to stay underwater for tremendous amounts of time without coming up to the surface. And so they have that stealth mode going on with it, which is what they like.
Wow.
But, you start building these kind of things, and that just tells the other guy, you got to build something better. You got to one up those guys. And so it's just this crazy race that just spirals up and up and out of control, and it never stops.
Well, not only never
And
stops, but it's not even discussed.
no,
Like,
it's not.
no one, this is the, I mean, I've been covering this. I knew that our submarines, that we had a few nuclear submarines, but I had no idea to the extent. This is why the whole thing with the USS Reagan, that's why they're fighting tooth and nail to accept any responsibility because, yeah, they went into Fukushima and got radioactive, but what if one of their own ships has a problem and their soldiers get radiated? They don't want the soldiers to have any recourse. That's why the
Yeah, and
I've been dumbfounded that our military would be fighting our soldiers, but that doesn't that make sense that that's kind of the logic behind it?
don't know what kind of logic they have, really. Their
Yeah.
logic is more insanity than logic, it seems at times.
Yes,
But
yes.
the naval reactor group is a huge group. It's been around forever. It's been around for a long, long time. And those guys are probably, of all of the branches of the military, they know more about reactors than anybody else. So whenever there's an issue, like over Fukushima, they got the naval reactor guys involved to go over there and try to help it out. Of course, there was really nothing you can do at a time when you start putting salt water inside of everything. But the boats, they're surrounded by salt water all the time. So I guess that made sense that you would think of that, but
Well, they knew though, but they knew that that would cause a negative reaction, right? Like they're not dumb.
oh
This
yeah,
wasn't like some
nothing
accident.
new.
They knew that, but wasn't that sort of their only option? They had no real options, right? But to put those salt water on it.
That was the only option at the time because of the wind direction.
Right. So that's
The
the
wind was
thing.
not blowing in a favorable direction. It was blowing onshore. They couldn't have that happen on onshore conditions, so they threw that at it just to buy them some time, knowing that, it's certainly never going to be able to be salvaged again. And it's going to have to burn. There's no way out.
Well, that brings us back to what we were talking about a half an hour ago, was number
Yeah.
three. They're lying about number three then. I mean, this is the whole thing about the whole deal. I mean, this is why this earthquake, I mean, God forbid we get hit with a much bigger earthquake over there because I mean, could that thing potentially, if they got hit with like a big earthquake like that, could those things blow up again or are they all burnt up and they could not possibly blow up again?
Well, that's only one of how many sites they have over there. They have a huge amount of
Yeah.
nuclear facilities over there. So, this is just a domino thing. Another earthquake, another domino will fall. you know, and they can, and it'll be the older ones first, of course, the old GE Mark Ones, with the
Wow.
ones that have the least amount of safety features to try to keep the thing cool when there's a when there's an issue. And they did get better, you know, at designing them, so they would give more and more time frame in between these blackouts. But the GE Mark Ones are really bad, and they knew they would blow up. They did studies on it. They actually blew them up on purpose. So
Wow.
they knew exactly what they were getting into, but they thought they could always, you know, keep control of everything and make it work. And Mother Nature just has other thoughts.
I'm so blown away. Like, this is a part of the, see, this is the thing. This whole tentacle, this is what you mean. It's really virtually, Mimi Gurman talked about this. They have zero, it's called, she said it's actually a policy called zero extrification or zero extrification, I think, where they just can't take themselves out of it. If the tentacles are so wide along the whole culture that nobody can just decide, okay, we're going to shut it down because
Yeah.
everybody's invested at such a deep level. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I imagine that all the other governments that are attempting to compete with the United States are also doing the same. Like, are there other countries with nuclear power facilities floating around the earth?
Yeah, the only one that's been able to really back off from it is Germany right now. But there's a lot of pressure over there to get the nuclear program restarted. So they
Wow.
basically wanted to phase everything out, and they would be able to do it. I have no problem. Well, I shouldn't say they were the only one. Also, Venezuela decided they were not going to go down that road anymore. They started going down the road and they stopped, and they decided that's a bad road to go down. So
Good for them.
those are the only two countries that come to mind to me that have said no to this whole nuclear cartel.
Wow.
And everybody else is still pretty much, you know, France is highly vested in it, England highly vested, US highly vested, Japan highly vested. You know, even some of the countries that don't have nuclear are supplying nuclear with like uranium, like Australia, you know, huge
Right.
deposits down there.
Right. Well, we just sent Australia a boatload of our waste too. That was another big thing. So
Yeah.
we're roping everybody in, you know, nobody gets untouched. I mean, it's really such a it's almost like they've just lost their sensibilities on this whole nuclear thing. You know,
Yeah.
they really are like they're digging in super hard because they can. Because most people don't even think about it. It's so overwhelming. And yet, the negative effects to our health are astounding. I mean,
Yeah, not just our health, but the whole ecology of the world.
everything. The future of the planet is being risked for the nuclear industry, for real.
Yeah, and that's why I got into it. I got into it because I was looking for the thing that I could fit the worst thing in the possible world that we had right now going on that was man-made, and I determined it was nuclear after researching a lot of different things.
What were the other contenders that you thought was like the worst things going on?
Well,
What makes nuclear the, I mean, this is a good argument to talk to the climate changers who, when I talk to them, they're like, well, nuclear isn't that bad, you know?
yeah. Well, see, they don't know. They don't know what it can do. You know, and when you start finding out that nuclear can accelerate climate change incredibly, then that's a big red flag going up. You know, you don't want that to happen. If you want to take control of climate change, you want to buy some time so we can do it, not just like ramp it up, which seems like it's been doing recently. It's just been ramped up. And of course, you know, when you look at what nuclear does to things and how it makes it appear that we have drought conditions because of what it can do to the plants, then, you know, and what does the radioactive gas do to our
Well,
ozone level up
let me
there?
stop you there. Explain what you're talking about, because what you're saying then is a lot of these so-called drought conditions that we're seeing around the country really are generated from nuclear, correct?
Yeah, I think I talked about this last time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll I'll go over it again, though, but there were, of course, a lot of studies done with plants and what nuclear radiation will do to plants. And the biggest thing it will do to all plants, whether it's grass, trees, or corn, or anything that we grow, it disrupts the plant's ability to take water up into their system, right? And so in doing that, it mimics the tree being droughted out, that it doesn't have enough water. So you would now have to pump a lot more water at all of this stuff, which is taking our water out of the ground, right? That's one of the reasons why we're losing a lot of our water supplies underneath, is everybody has to water more and more to keep everything green. Now you have to water twice as much as you used to produce the same look. Hmm. And, you know, you look at the trees, you know, you look at the tops, a lot of the trees are dying out, you know. Why is that? Well, the tree literally can't get the water up to the top of the trees anymore. It's just,
right.
It's limiting its ability to take that water up, and the leaves are getting leathery and all dry and crisp. And I'm not talking in the fall time. I'm talking in the springtime.
Right.
And of course, you got the different mutations that you can see in the leaves and in the fruit and in the flowers and even the trees themselves. So there's that aspect too, the mutation aspect of it, as well as the ability for the stuff to actually survive by taking water up.
Well, I mean, it's funny that I know we talked about the trees, but I didn't really think of it in terms of like this recent, you know, we recently have had the Midwest on fire. And it did not even occur to me that probably is in large part because of the radioactive contamination.
Exactly. You go and you look where they've been having these fires or where they've been clearing out. I mean, I was up to the top of Mary's Peak here, which is the tallest peak in the Coast Range in Oregon. And I was looking around up there, and there was some serious radiation damage up there from stuff that came in. It looked like it came up over the top of the mountain in areas really low to the ground, and it fried off all the bottoms of the pine trees. And they actually went up there, the Forest Service went up there, and they cut all that out and burned it this last year.
Oh my God!
So it wouldn't. So it wouldn't. You wouldn't have that look of something happened. And I've got to get a Geiger counter up there. I want to get a Geiger counter up there and start taking some readings around up there to see what it is. I think it's going to be pretty high.
When did they do this?
It was just this last year.
I wonder if that really, you know, I have a dear friend of mine who died unexpectedly. Like, he just died. It was a stroke. I mean, he's a forest ranger, and he's always out. And I've been really concerned about his exposure to radioactive contamination because he's always out in the forest, and we know that it's there. I mean, he was 58 years old. He wasn't old. You know what I mean? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, how, and the doctor's like, well, we don't know how, there's no family history, blah, blah, blah. And just all of a sudden, boom, he put his head down to take a little nap and had a stroke and never got back up and died 2 days later. And it was just like, what are you talking about? And it's funny, when I spoke to his wife and said, do you think the fact that he was out there exposed to radioactive contamination? She's like, oh, no, no, no. That had nothing to do with it. I mean,
well, it actually does. I mean, one of the biggest threats to us right now is with our vascular system. And the trees have that same vascular system in their uptaking water. Well, our vascular system is blood. And so we get those radioactive contamination inside of us, and it travels around in our blood, and it disrupts the cells of the cell walls of the veins, producing, I don't know if you've noticed, though, have you noticed your hands? Like, if you grab something really hard and pull, you'll get a little hematoma, like a blood vessel will pop a lot easier than used to. I don't know if you've noticed that, but I certainly have. I've had a lot of those things happen in my hands, so I don't pull on rope and string as hard as I used to.
You mean that the vessels kind of pop out of your hand a little, they bulge out, you mean?
No, they get weakened. They get weakened. And so they're easier to blow out or easier to get a blood clot. you know, and strokes. I had a good friend of mine in Hood River who had a stroke this last year out of the blue. You know, it's like, how could that? Yeah, okay. The vascular system. I think Helen Caldicott talked about that, that being like one of the biggest issues that we're going to see will be strokes and heart attacks. The heart attack's also coming with the cesium that gets into the heart muscle. Those two combined, the vascular and that, is a really bad combination for the human body.
Yeah, especially in young people. I'm very concerned about the baseball players going to Fukushima because they're all going to be playing outside. None of them are going to be playing indoors, you know, and it's all, they're going to be right in Fukushima Prefecture, and they're all young people. They are all like the category of people who are highly affected to cesium. I mean, it's a really, this is the shocking thing, though, Matt, is they know about this, right? This is not like, we're sitting here on the radio talking about it, but the people who make these decisions, they have to ignore this information. It's not like they don't know, correct?
Oh, they know about it. Yeah, they know about it.
Wow.
But they've got to keep up the front, you know, that it's safe and clean and green and everything like that, because, you know,
we're so heavily invested in it. Like,
they got a lot of money in it, and greed can make you do a lot of things.
They're taking us all down with them, aren't they? Like, that's the thing. They don't care. It's like, they don't care. Wow. I have to say, after Fukushima happened, I still, you know, I feel a lot better than I did 2 days ago. But, man, I was hard hit. I felt like being on the radio, I felt like I was a band member on the Titanic. You know what I mean? Like, really? I mean, at a certain point, when are they going to wake up? And I've come to the conclusion they're not going to. And the reason that this interview has been very enlightening for me personally, the connectivity of the military might all around the planet running around with little nuclear reactors all over the place. I mean, it really reminds me that it's insidiously hidden everywhere.
Yeah, and it's hidden at the top level. I'm not saying that, you know, every single military person out there is bad. That's totally not what I'm saying. But at the high levels of military and government are these people, and some of them are not even in that, you know, some of them are in the banking industry and other areas. But it's the power people, really, that are in control of this whole thing, and they want to keep everybody else in the dark, because when it gets out, people are going to start putting pressure on them, and they don't like pressure.
Yeah.
They don't like anybody, even peaceful pressure, as we've seen it at DAPL. They don't like people standing there saying no.
Right.
You know, they'll use whatever they can to get you out of your way.
That's
and to
right.
shut you up.
Well, just like I've been trying to call this guy Elliot Mainzer, I can't even get through to his secretary. So, like, that's pretty ironic. Look, we have 30 seconds left, Matt. I am super excited that you've decided to become a friend of our show. I hope to have you back on a regular basis, because you're a plethora of information. This is the value of citizen journalists, because you're not paid by anybody, so you have no prejudices.
Exactly.
I really appreciate it. We have 15 seconds left. Thank you for joining us, folks. I'll be back on the air tomorrow with Dana Durnford. Please put your courage feet on. Take some action. Let's just keep pressuring them and putting them back, even if they don't like it. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks, Matt, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
This is JJ Eagle.